Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Courier for June 30th, 2022, on the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. I am your reader, Peter Welch. No plans to call session. Reynolds may consider if courts fail to enforce fetal heartbeat bill. In Des Moines, Governor Kim Reynolds is not planning to call a special legislative session to pass abortion restrictions, but she suggested she may consider it if her attempt to bring back enforcement of Iowa's so-called fetal heartbeat bill fails in state courts. Reynolds, a Republican, on Tuesday announced plans to challenge a 2018 district court decision that halted enforcement of the bill, which would ban abortions after cardiac activity is detected in a fetus, usually around 6 weeks. The announcement came after a U.S. Supreme Court decision overturning Roe v. Wade, which guaranteed a federal right to an abortion, allowing states broad freedom to restrict abortion access. She's also asking the Iowa Supreme Court to reconsider a recent ruling that overturned a previous ruling saying that the state constitution guarantees the right to an abortion. While a win for Iowa Republicans, the ruling which came before Friday's U.S. Supreme Court decision still left room for courts to strike down some abortion restrictions under Planned Parenthood versus Casey's undue burden standard. We've got two laws in place, and so we're going to move forward with that, wait and see what the ruling is based on that, and then we'll reassess after that point, she said. Abortion is currently legal in Iowa until 20 weeks of pregnancy. Without a special session, the next time state lawmakers will meet in the Capitol is early January 2023. If Republicans keep a majority in the legislature and Reynolds wins re-election, they're expected to pass more laws restricting abortion. In a statement after the Supreme Court ruling on Friday, Reynolds said that she would not rest until every unborn Iowan is protected and respected. She didn't indicate on Wednesday what her end goal is for abortion access in Iowa. We have the heartbeat bill on the books, and so let's lift the injunction and let's make that a law, she said on Wednesday. And so we're going to start with that. On Friday, Republican Senate leader Jack Whitaker, Republican of Ankeny, indicated Senate Republicans would seek abortion restrictions in response to the federal ruling. As a pro-life caucus, Senate Republicans have led on the protections of life and will continue to do so, he said in a statement. We look forward to continuing to advance the cause of the unborn. As for when the fetal heartbeats bill injunction may be lifted, Reynolds said that the timeline is in the court's hands after she filed the request to review the cases. Legislative Democrats have decried Reynolds' court challenges, saying that the Republicans are poised to roll back abortion access further. Iowa Republicans will not stop until they have completely banned abortions without exception, Senate Minority Leader Zach Walls, Democrat of Coralville, said on Tuesday. This is an incredibly dangerous action that threatens the health, safety, and future of Iowa women. And in Des Moines, new rules, Iowa style, jobless cuts, vax ban, garbage grabs among laws taking effect on the 1st of July. In Des Moines, starting Friday, Iowans will see reduced unemployment benefits, child care providers will see relaxed regulations, and schools will be banned from requiring COVID-19 vaccinations. Law enforcement can also start looking through your garbage without a search warrant. Governor Kim Reynolds signed more than 150 bills into law this year, passed by the legislature. Many of those measures take effect on Friday, the start of the state's new fiscal year. The laws do everything from banning school districts and daycare centers from requiring students and children be immunized against COVID-19 to allowing all-terrain vehicles to travel on more county and state highways. Here is a look at some of the bills and what that means for Iowans. Jobless benefits. Unemployed workers in Iowa will receive 10 fewer weeks of state unemployment benefits. The new law reduces the length of benefits from 26 to 16 weeks. Iowa becomes just the fourth state to provide benefits of 16 weeks or less. Reynolds, in a statement, said this will modernize Iowa's unemployment system and attract new workers to businesses. The new law will also change requirements for taking a job that pays less than the unemployed Iowan's previous job. The progressive advocacy group Progress Iowa issued a statement critical of the reduction, saying it will hurt laid-off workers, suppress wages, and make Iowa an unwelcoming state. Delivery services. Third-party food delivery apps like DoorDash, Grubhub, and Uber Eats that use a restaurant's logo or menu without permission will be subject to fines, starting at $1,000 and up to $10,000. The rise of third-party delivery services has caused issues for restaurants seeing their menus and images used online without permission and have become a growing source of consumer complaints, according to the Iowa Restaurant Association. Under the new law, third-party delivery services must enter into agreements with restaurants to arrange for delivery or pickup of orders. It also requires delivery services to adhere to food safety regulations, including barring passengers, pets, smoking, and vaping in the vehicle when delivering food, and are liable for any harm or injury caused for failure to meet these requirements. Delivery apps must also clearly provide a way for customers to raise concerns about an order and cannot intentionally inflate or alter a restaurant's pricing without its consent. Delivery services, however, may charge additional fees as long as they're noted separately to the customer. Child care workers. Child care workers who are 16 or 17 years of age can be unsupervised. Care centers can operate with one worker for every 7 2-year-olds and one worker for every 10 3-year-olds. The new law was designed by Republican lawmakers to address child care worker shortages. Critics have said it does not go far enough, and note it does not contain any provision to help address child care workers' low wages or funding designed to entice the creation of more child care centers. School vaccinations. Colleges K through 12, school districts, and daycare centers cannot require students and children to be immunized from COVID-19. Schools, by state law, require 8 types of immunizations at age 5. COVID-19 will not be added to that list after the law passed the legislature mostly on party line votes, with Republicans supporting the proposal and Democrats opposing. Garbage searches. Law enforcement officials will be able to search an individual's garbage placed at the curb without having to obtain a search warrant from the court. The new law states a person has no reasonable expectations of privacy for garbage placed outside the residence for collection in a publicly accessible area. Instead, it designates that the garbage as abandoned property. The law was spurred by a 2021 Iowa Supreme Court decision in which a divided court banned police from searching people's uncollected trash without a warrant. The case involved a Clear Lake man who successfully appealed a conviction and sentence for drug possession based on evidence obtained from a warrantless search of his trash. Supporters say it will make the law enforcement investigation simpler and easier, and that the U.S. Supreme Court has held that warrantless garbage grabs do not violate the federal constitutional prohibition on reasonable search and seizures. pregnancy services. The state budget includes $500,000 for nonprofit organizations that provide pregnancy support services and advocate against abortion. To receive funding under the new statewide program, organizations must have a primary mission of promoting healthy pregnancies and childbirth instead of abortion, according to the new law. Reynolds, in a statement, touted that the program is a way to promote healthy pregnancies and meet the needs of new mothers in the wake of state and federal Supreme Court decisions, paving the way for further abortion restrictions in the state. The new statewide program seeks to promote childbirth by providing information, counseling, and support services that assist pregnant women or women who believe they may be pregnant to choose childbirth and to make informed decisions regarding the choice of adoption or parenting. ATVs on highways, all-terrain and off-road utility vehicles can travel on more county and state highways with few exceptions. ATVs and UTVs can now cross non-interstate two-lane highways statewide that serve as the most direct and accessible route between an ATV park or trail, a secondary road or city street on which such vehicles are authorized, and the operator's home. The law requires users be at least 18 years of age and mandate liability insurance coverage on the vehicles and a host of security requirements for the vehicles, including headlights and mirrors. Cities and counties could override the measure, allowing for expanded operation on primary highways and secondary roads in cases of unsafe intersections. Co-op seeking new CF site for $2.9 million building. In Cedar Falls, Rooted Carrot Co-op market officials say they're looking for a multiple potentials sites for the planned 2.89 million brick and mortar store. A previous proposal to construct the building at the corner of 7th and Main Streets fell apart in March, largely because of parking-related issues and some confusion about the newly adopted downtown zoning code. Rooted Carrot is a community-owned grocery store that seeks to enhance the health and well-being of the greater Cedar Valley, according to its mission statement. It's hard to say whether we're close to finalizing plans for a new site, says Tom Wickersham, a board member and founder, because we've been up and down this roller coaster before. The co-op continues to look for a site that can accommodate a 7,000 square foot grocery store operation, which has good access and visibility in or around downtown Cedar Falls, Wickersham said. Starting a $3 million business is not an easy task, and there have been multiple obstacles, but ones that we've seen other co-ops face, Wickersham went on to say. This is one of the largest grassroots efforts ever seen in Cedar Falls, he added. We've been astonished by the community support and buy-in, and we're confident more than 25,000 volunteer hours will lead to a successful outcome. The potential for a co-op market in Cedar Falls was dreamt up about a decade ago after Roots Market closed on Main Street in 2012. It left a void in the community, and people felt it was time to capitalize on a successful business model, one that would suitably meet the community's needs, Wickersham said. A total of 75 community members showed up to the first meeting about the possible venture that was first named the Cedar Falls Food Co-op and was incorporated in 2014, said Wickersham. Developer Brent Dahlstrom proposed constructing a new building at 123rd West 7th Street, and that led to the demolition of the old First Baptist Church at the end of last year. If built, it would have housed the co-op and other tenants at the Main Street corner. The building on 7th and Main was a lost opportunity, in part because of an unmet agreement that was pitched to the developer if underground parking was pursued, and in part because of confusion regarding when the new downtown code would take effect for a project already submitted, said Kate Dunning, another board member, in a statement to The Courier. Dunning said that the co-op asked if the new code would apply to a project submitted before the ordinance was adopted, but a response was not provided until after the plans were submitted, and it indicated that the project would not be reviewed due to this to the code change. Rooted Carrot supports the new code and the research and work involved in the implementation, and we're proud to be seeking roots in Cedar Falls, and we continue to seek partnership with the city to add local grocery to the impressive lineup of all things Cedar Falls, Dunning went on to say. In addition to the former parking requirements not being met, Karen Howard, City Planning and Community Services Manager, noted in a statement there were concerns from Community Main Street and other members of the public about the lack of parking in the plans. City staff offered several suggestions on how the project could be revised to meet the requirements. It was not until October 25th, 2021, when a revised plan was submitted to the city. New zoning rules were adopted on November 1st, 2021. The new code opened up new possibilities for development, and city staff has offered to assist the developer in refining their plans for the site, Howard said. In a video update in March, the co-op said that the real sticking point with the new code was that 80% of the lot lines fronting the three streets, Washington, 7th, and Main, would need to be occupied by a physical building. That is to say that parking or a driveway to parking could only front 20% of the linear feet along those lot lines. As a result, the building would need to be shaped like an extended U, and parking would need to be on the interior of the lot, accessed by a driveway, according to the update. The simple fact is a grocery store needs to be rectangular or square in shape in order to be financially and operationally feasible. In the meantime, while searching for a new site, the team also is working to grow its own owner member base, recruit volunteers, negotiate bank loans, and update those interested in the venture on social media, Wickersham said. He noted that the Rooted Carrot has raised about 45% of its $1.75 million capital campaign goal between donations and interest-earning loans. The push for funds has been quiet since last summer, he said, and the campaign will not again go public until a new site is selected and its stakeholders feel confident about it. And while not publicly pushing to raise funds, it welcomes more owner members and financial contributions. Wickersham said that the co-op has about 1,200 members, owners, a majority of whom live in the Blackhawk County and 8 surrounding counties. While we do not have the brick and mortar store yet, member owners already receive benefits ranging from business partner discounts to having a vote and say in how the store will be, according to its website. Your input could influence this community more than anything you've ever done before. The Rooted Carrot will be like most other food co-ops started in the last 20 years, said Wickersham, and will incorporate national models for efficiency and smart practices. But the team will look to develop some unique programs and services, possibly like a food truck. Once up and running, it will be operated by 13 employees, Wickersham went on to say. And when fully matured in about 7 years, he said, it will employ 22 people. And now let's go to world news in Madrid. Stronger Ukraine support vowed. NATO declares Russia direct threat to peace. In Madrid, NATO declared Russia the most significant and direct threat to its members' peace and security on Wednesday, and vowed to strengthen support for Ukraine, even as that country's leaders chided the alliance for not doing more to help it defeat Moscow. The military organization's condemnation was not wholly surprising. Its chief earlier said that Russia's war in Ukraine had created Europe's biggest security crisis since World War II. But it was sobering for an alliance that a decade ago called Moscow a strategic partner. NATO also issued a warning about China, accusing it of bullying its neighbors and forming a strategic partnership with Moscow that poses a challenge to the West. Set up some 70 years ago to counter the Soviet Union, NATO held its summit in Madrid in a world transformed by Russia's invasion of its neighbor. The war drove the alliance to pour troops and weapons into Eastern Europe on a scale unseen in decades, and pushed Sweden and Finland to seek the safety of NATO membership. The two formerly non-aligned nations were formally invited to join on Wednesday. As Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg said, the war had brought the biggest overhaul of our collective defense since the end of the Cold War. But Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky lamented that NATO's open-door policy to new members did not appear to apply to his country. The open-door policy of NATO shouldn't resemble the old turnstiles on Kyiv's subway, which stay open but close when you approach them until you pay, Zelensky said by video link. Hasn't Ukraine paid enough? He also asked for more modern artillery systems and other weaponry and warned that the leaders that they either had to provide Kyiv with the help it needed or face a delayed war between Russia and yourself. The question is, who's next? Moldova or the Baltics or Poland? The answer is all of them, he said. Zelensky has acknowledged that NATO membership is a distant prospect. Under NATO treaties, an attack on any of the 30 members would trigger a military response by the entire alliance. So it's trying to strike a delicate balance, letting its nations arm Ukraine without sparking a direct confrontation with nuclear-armed Russia. At the same time, NATO has moved quickly to ensure that its members are protected, dramatically scaling up military force along its eastern flank, where countries from Romania to the Baltic states worry about Russia's future plans. If plans to increase almost eightfold the size of the alliance's rapid reaction force from 40,000 to 300,000 troops by next year. The troops will be based in their home nations, but dedicated to specific countries in the east, where the alliance plans to build up stocks of equipment and ammunition. U.S. President Joe Biden, whose country provides the bulk of NATO's military power, vowed that the summit would send an unmistakable message that NATO is strong and united. We're stepping up. We're providing that NATO is more needed now than it ever has been, said Biden. He announced a hefty boost in America's military presence in Europe, including a permanent U.S. base in Poland, two more Navy destroyers based in Rota, Spain, and two more F-35 squadrons to the U.K. Still, strains among NATO allies have also emerged as the cost of energy and other essential goods has skyrocketed, partly because of the war and tough Western sanctions on Russia. There also are tensions over how the war will end and what, if any, concessions Ukraine should make. Money remains a sensitive issue. Just 9 of NATO's 30 members currently meet the organization's targets of spending 2% of gross domestic product on defense. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson, whose country does hit the target, urged NATO allies to dig deep to restore deterrence and ensure defense in the decade ahead. At the summit, the leaders published NATO's new strategic concept, its once a decade set of priorities and goals. The last such document in 2010 called Russia a strategic partner. At that time, the idea of Russia waging a land war on NATO's borders would have sounded far-fetched. Now, NATO accused Russia of using coercion, subversion, aggression, and annexation to extend its reach. The document also set out NATO's approach on issues from cybersecurity to climate change and the growing economic and military reach of China. For the first time, the leaders of Japan, Australia, South Korea, and New Zealand attended the summit as guests, a reflection of the growing importance of Asia and the Pacific region and NATO's desire to counterbalance China. China is not our adversary, but we must be clear-eyed about the serious challenges it represents, Stoltenberg went on to say. We see a deepening strategic partnership between Moscow and Beijing, and China's growing assertiveness and its coercive policies have consequences for the security of our allies and our partners, he added. The alliance said that, however, that it remained open to constructive engagement with Beijing. NATO also stressed the need to address political instability in Africa's Sahel region and the Middle East, aggravated by climate change, fragile institutions, health emergencies, and food insecurity that is driving large numbers of migrants toward Europe. Host Spain and other European countries pushed for this new focus. And now let's take a look at some other nation or national news. Poll. Most say that the nation is on the wrong track, including Democrats. In Washington, an overwhelming and growing majority of Americans say that the U.S. is heading in the wrong direction, including nearly 8 in 10 Democrats, according to a new poll that finds deep pessimism about the economy plaguing President Joe Biden. 85% of the U.S. adults say that the country is on the wrong track, and 79% describe the economy as poor, according to a new survey from the Associated Press NORC Center for Public Affairs Research. The findings suggest that Biden faces fundamental challenges as he tries to motivate voters to cast ballots for Democrats in November's midterm election. Inflation has consistently eclipsed the healthy 3.6% unemployment rate as a focal point for Americans. We're dealing with high gasoline and food prices. Even among Democrats, 67% call economic conditions poor. He's doing the best he can. I can't say he's doing a good job, said Chuck McClain, age 74. But his opposition is so bad. I just don't feel the Democratic Congress is doing enough. The Las Vegas resident is a loyal Democrat who said he doesn't miss an election. But he said the price of gas and groceries and Russia's war in Ukraine and the country's deep political divides have led more Americans to feel as though Washington is unresponsive to their needs. My wife and I are very frustrated with where the country is headed, and we don't have a lot of hope for the political end of it to get any better, he said. The poll shows only 39% of Americans approve of Biden's leadership overall, while 60% disapprove. His approval rating fell to its lowest point of his presidency last month and remains at that level. The Democratic president gets hit even harder on the economy, with 69% saying they disapprove of him on the issue. Among Democrats, 43% disapprove of Biden's handling of the economy. Just 14% say things are going in the right direction, down slightly from 21% in May and 29% in April. Through the first half of 2021, about half of Americans said that the country was headed in the right direction, a number that has steadily eroded in the past year. Dorothy Voto, 66, said that she voted for Biden in 2020, but plans to switch allegiance this year. I'm a Democrat, so I had to vote Democrat, but that's going to change, said the Martin County, North Carolina resident. In recent weeks, Americans have endured even more bad economic news, with inflation continuing to rise, interest rates increasing dramatically, and the S&P 500 entering a bear market, as many serious economists predict a recession. Yet consumer spending has largely kept pace, and hiring remains brisk, and a sign that families and businesses have been able to withstand some of the economic pain. In an interview this month with the AP, Biden traced the decline in his popularity to increase in gas prices that began a year ago. He said that the prices shot up further with Russia's invasion of Ukraine in February, but he rejected claims by Republican lawmakers and some major economists that his $1.9 trillion coronavirus relief package from last year contributed to inflation, noting that price increases were a global phenomenon. We're in a stronger position than any nation in the world to overcome this inflation, Biden said. If it's my fault, why is it the case in every other major industrial country in the world that inflation is higher? Douglas Gavlin, a 26-year-old in Miami, is concerned about the skyrocketing prices and rent that he sees in his community. Shelter costs are roughly a third of the U.S. Consumer Price Index, so the run-up in rents and home values has started to strain the budgets even of many people living where there are strong job opportunities. I don't even know if I'm going to be able to live here in a few years, Gavlin said. I definitely don't feel confident in the economy. Though he doesn't identify with a political party, Gavlin voted for Biden in 2020. He doesn't think Biden has proposed anything to make a meaningful difference in his life, but he does think the president's in a tough spot. There's very little he can do without everyone blaming him for everything, Gavlin said. The poll was conducted from Thursday to Monday, with many interviews conducted after the Supreme Court on Friday struck down Roe v. Wade and allowed states to ban abortion, a decision opposed by a majority of the American people in earlier polls, which could also have contributed to the continued slump in the national mood. You're listening to the reading of The Courier on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind, and I am your reader, Peter Welch. Now, let's take a look at today's obituary news. Robert C. Helpley has passed. Locke at Tower Park is assisting the family. Online condolences may be expressed at www.lockfuneralservices.com. Dixie Ungest has passed. Dixie of Cedar Falls passed on the 28th of June. The memorial service will be held at the New Aldea Chapel, the date to be determined. Joan Eleanor Millis, age 84, of Denver, passed on Saturday at the Bartels Lutheran Retirement Community in Waverly, and funeral arrangements are being taken care of by the Kaiser Corson Funeral Home in Denver. And if you want to call them, you can at 319-984-5379. And finally, Roger Westfall of Waldo, Florida, formerly at Fairbanks, passed away on the 25th of June at Parkside Assisted Living in Stark, Florida. Funeral services will be held at 10:30 a.m. Friday on July 1st at the United Methodist Church in Fairbank. Visitations from 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. on Friday, the 1st of July, at United Methodist Church. Burial will be Pleasant Grove Cemetery, McGregor, Iowa. And also, online condolences can be left at www.woodsfuneralhome.net. Now let's take a look at Cedar Valley section of the paper. Today in history. Today is Thursday, June 30th, the 181st day of 2022, and there are 184 days left in the year. Today's highlight: on June 30th, 1982, the proposed Equal Rights Amendment to the U.S. Constitution expired, having failed to receive the required number of ratifications for its adoption, despite having its seven-year deadline extended by 3 years. Also on this date, in 1918, labor activist and socialist Eugene V. Debs was arrested in Cleveland, charged under the Espionage Act of 1917 for a speech he'd made 2 weeks earlier denouncing U.S. involvement in World War I. Debs was sentenced to prison and disenfranchised for life. In 1921, President Warren G. Harding nominated former President William Howard Taft to be Chief Justice of the U.S., succeeding the late Edward Douglas White. In 1934, Adolf Hitler launched his blood purge of political and military rivals in Germany in what came to be known as the Night of the Long Knives. In 1958, the U.S. Senate passed the Alaska Statehood Bill by a vote of 64 to 20. In 1971, the Supreme Court ruled 6-3 that the government could not prevent the New York Times or the Washington Post from publishing the Pentagon Papers. A Soviet space mission ended in tragedy when three cosmonauts aboard the Soyuz 11 were found dead of asphyxiation inside their capsule after it had returned to Earth. In 1985, 39 American hostages from a hijacked TWA jetliner were freed in Beirut after being held 17 days. In 1986, the Supreme Court in Bowers v. Hardwick ruled 5-4 that states could outlaw homosexual acts between consenting adults. However, the nation's highest court effectively reversed this decision in 2003 in Lawrence v. Texas. In 1984, the U.S. Figure Skating Association stripped Tanya Harding of the National Championship and banned her for life for her role in the attack on rival Nancy Kerrigan. In 2009, American soldier PFC Bao R. Bergdahl went missing from his base in eastern Afghanistan and was later confirmed to have been captured by insurgents after walking away from his post. Bergdahl was released on May 31, 2014, in exchange for 5 Taliban detainees. He pleaded guilty to desertion and misbehavior before the enemy, but was spared a prison sentence by a military judge. In 2013, 19 elite firefighters known as members of the Granite Mountain Hotshots were killed battling a wildfire northwest of Phoenix after a change in wind direction pushed the flames back toward their position. In 2016, saying it was the right thing to do, Defense Secretary Ash Carter announced that transgender people would be allowed to serve openly in the U.S. military, ending one of the last bans on service in the armed forces. In 2020, Mississippi Governor Tate Reeves signed a landmark bill retiring the last state flag bearing the Confederate battle emblem. Boston Arts Commission voted unanimously to remove a statue depicting a freed slave kneeling at Abraham Lincoln's feet. 10 years ago, Islamist Mohamed Morsi became Egypt's first freely elected president as he was sworn in during a pair of ceremonies. An international conference in Geneva accepted a UN-brokered peace plan calling for creation of a transitional government in Syria. But at Russia's insistence, the compromise left the door open to Syria's president being a part of it. Former Israeli Prime Minister Shamir died at age 96. 5 years ago, President Donald Trump and South Korea's new leader Moon Jae-in concluded 2 days of talks in the White House showed joint resolve on North Korea despite their divergent philosophies for addressing the nuclear threat. 1 year ago, Pennsylvania's highest court threw out Bill Cosby's sexual assault conviction and released him from prison, ruling that the prosecutor who brought the case was bound by his predecessor's agreement not to charge Cosby. The comedian had served nearly 3 years of a 3-to-10-year sentence. Sharply split along party lines, the House launched a new investigation of the January 6th Capitol insurrection, approving a special committee to probe the violent attack. And let's look at other news in the Cedar Valley area. Diana Blake, strike up the band for this vital force in the community. In Waverly, if there is a concert band in the Cedar Valley area. Diana Blake probably plays in it, directs it, or helped found it. Sometimes all three. At age 80, the longtime former music instructor at Waverly Shell Rock Community Schools hasn't slowed down a bit. Originally from Osceola, Blake played the clarinet in school and then took up the bassoon in college at Drake University. She graduated with a degree in music education in 1965 and started working at Waverly Shell Rock that same year. I heard about a job opening, Blake said. I was told it was a good school system and a good town, and they were right. She spent her entire career with the school system, retiring in 2003. I never seriously looked anywhere else, she said. Jim Vowles, a band director in the school district, was one of many people who nominated Blake for 8 over 80 honors. She's never really retired, he said. She continues to teach private lessons to WSR students on clarinet, bassoon, and oboe. She's a fixture in our band room, and all our band students know her. She voluntarily helps prepare students for solo festival every spring and attends all our performances regardless of her involvement with the preparation. To me, personally, Diana is a sounding board. She and I talk about band literature all the time and what pieces would fit our ensembles. This is my 30th year teaching, and I can honestly say that Diana has forgotten more about bands than I'll ever know. Blake has seen the children and grandchildren of her original students come through the district's music program. It's a great connection, she said. Blake, who never married and didn't have children, has found her home among other musicians. Being part of a musical group is like being in a family, she said. If that is the case, her extended family just continues to grow. Blake is a member of both the Cedar Rapids and Waterloo Municipal Bands. She's a member and director of the University of Northern Iowa New Horizons Band and founded an area bassoon band that plays Christmas concerts at the Waverly Public Library. As a member of the Cedar Falls Municipal Band, Diana has played bassoon and served as the assistant conductor. And another nominator, Scott Muntenfering, a trumpet professor at Wartburg College and director of the Waterloo Municipal Band. She serves on the executive board and is a member of the clarinet section of the Waterloo Municipal Band. Her dedication to performing, teaching, and directing music at a high level for almost 60 years has served as an example of her leadership and passion for music making. She's received numerous awards for her work, including awards from the Iowa Bandmasters Association. New Horizons Band colleague Linda Moeller calls Blake a vital force in the Cedar Valley area. Under her baton, the UNI New Horizons Band has grown to more than 90 participants from across Northeast Iowa. She leads twice a week rehearsals for these 55 and older musicians during fall, spring, and summer terms. Her twice-yearly concerts at the Gallagher Blue Dorn Performing Arts Center draw larger crowds than most UNI music events, and she takes the band to other communities in the summer. I will keep going until I and others know it's time to hang it up, Blake said. The conducting is a bit taxing for me now, but I can still hear wrong notes, by God. Blake's community involvement extends beyond the musical spectrum. She has been a trustee on the Waverly Public Library Board since the early 1980s, has served as both president and vice president numerous times. She's also a member of the Waverly Public Library Foundation. Diana helped champion the idea of a new library building for Waverly in the mid-1990s, which resulted in the beautiful facility that exists today, said Sarah Meyer, library director. She's remained very committed to the library over the years, and she's an avid reader, a book club member, and the caretaker of the library's indoor plants, which is a time-consuming task. Diana believes in the public library as an institution that exists for the entire community and has always supported the idea of a diverse viewpoints being expressed in the collection. Blake is also involved with the Waverly Rotary Club, Meals on Wheels, Salvation Army Bell Ringing, Kids Kingdom, and the Waverly Rail Trail Bridge Project. She doesn't plan to slow down anytime soon. being active, being around young people. If you've done it all through your life, why turn it off now? She said, if I can remain rather relevant to the community, why not? There's so many dedicated people out there. I see people doing a good job, and I want to be like that. I just can't imagine not doing what I do. I'm not a traveler, not me. I'm here. I get up every day and try to have something productive for myself and others to do. It's good for my physical and mental health. I keep looking for things to make every day fresh. Music is for your whole life, Blake said. You never have to stop doing it. HCC could better use class space. College hasn't achieved efficiencies, plan shows. In Waterloo, classroom and lab underutilization data was one hot topic discussed on Tuesday by Hawkeye Community College Board of Trustees when introduced to its newly drafted comprehensive master facilities plan. The assessment developed by RDG Planning and Design includes an outlook for the next 10 years. The trustees learned Hawkeye could better utilize its classrooms and labs to increase efficiency and effectiveness. After the firm dove into the hours that they're available in the fall of 2021 semester versus the hours actually being used, all the classrooms on campus combined for 1,109 hours per week of usage. There was still a capacity of 2,219 hours per week, said architect Nick Schultz. He said that the college should target about 80% or 32 hours of the average work week. For perspective, Black Hawk Hall is 50% utilized, while Bremer and Butler Halls are used 44% and 45% of the time, respectively. About 60 to 70% is where a lot of institutions end up landing. The college's station occupancy, better put as butts in seats, or how many classroom seats are filled throughout the day, stood an average at about 40%. Labs landed in around 50%. The goal is 68%. What that starts to tell us is that you don't have the right size classrooms, Schultz said. You have classes that are 40 people or larger, and you're only putting 20 people in them. So how do we start to look at right sizing those classrooms so we're creating spaces that are the right size for the number of students that are actually going to be in there? Station occupancy for Black Hawk, Bremer, and Butler Halls are 42%, 49%, and 39% respectively. Once you start getting the data, you have to analyze what your culture is and what your community desires are, Schultz continues to say. It's not about spending a ton of money. It's about spending it wisely, he added. Moving to central scheduling of all educational space to remove silos of ownership was one recommendation. Reductions in the number of classrooms for general education needs was another. The master plan is viewed as a roadmap for possible building projects that would help the college better meet the needs of students and the community. College leadership will need to determine its next step at a later date. Also discussed during the nearly 90-minute period was how the bones of the existing facility are in good shape, but that the various finishes, technology and systems, electric, HVAC, etc., are outdated. Plans for another larger building projects like a future Butler Hall remodeling in addition, as well as a new facility for Hawkeye's Iowa Law Enforcement Academy, are among those being completed by the trustee staff and consultants. And let's see what else is going on. Well, let's take a look at Waterloo. Asphalt overlay plan for East High Lot. The Waterloo School Board approved an $85,000 bid. In Waterloo, an East High School parking lot will receive an asphalt overlay at a cost of $85,000 after signs of wear and tear have emerged. The lot is on the north side of the school. The project will be paid for through Waterloo Community Schools physical plant and equipment levy funds, which are used to repair and maintain school buildings, among other things. The Board of Education on Tuesday approved the quote from Max Asphalt of Waterloo during a special meeting. the lowest of two bids. It includes removal of all speed bumps except one, removal of unstable materials from the existing lot, skim patching the entire lot to fill holes and low spots, and applying adhesive. Contractors will also machine lay 3 inches of hot mix asphalt and roll it for compaction. The project is scheduled to be completed this summer. In other businesses, the board approved Joshua Payton as the interim principal at George Washington Carver Academy with an annual salary of $121,000, a change order for the Waterloo Career Center expansion project related to relocating the fire department connection at an additional cost of $7,514. Total construction costs for the project are $28.86 million. And in other Waterloo news, one arrested for gun drugs following Tuesday chase. In Waterloo, police arrested a Waterloo man following a brief chase Tuesday evening. Officers attempted to pull over a Chrysler 300 in the area of Franklin and East 11th Streets around 6:15 p.m. because the driver had a suspended license, according to court records. The vehicle initially pulled into a convenience store parking lot on Franklin Street, but then took off on 11th Street and crossed the river before crashing into a light pole on West 6th and Jefferson Streets. The driver ran off on foot, but slammed into the side of another squad car that was in the area, according to police. He was detained, and police seized a handgun that had been in his waistband, records state. Police also found a bag of Xanax pills on the driver and a bag of marijuana in the vehicle. Christopher Lake, age 19, was arrested for eluding, carrying weapons, interference while armed, and possession of marijuana and a controlled substance. Bond was set at $10,000. Court records show that Lake is awaiting trial after a September search of an apartment at 611 Johnson Street. Officers with the violent crime apprehension teams found a .357 caliber Ross revolver, marijuana, and cash. And in other news, this time in Cedar Falls, police arrest man for taking 1,000 rounds of ammo. In Cedar Falls, police have arrested a man who allegedly stole more than 1,000 rounds of rifle ammunition from a Cedar Falls store. Investigators arrested Jalen Malik Seals, age 22, of Cedar Falls when he returned the following day and attempted to walk away with even more ammo. Seals is charged with 2 counts of felon in possession of ammunition, second-degree theft, and third-degree theft, according to Cedar Falls police. Bond was initially set at $7,000. According to police, Seals and another person entered Blaine's Farm and Fleet, 218 Brandyland Boulevard, on Tuesday and took 1,300 rounds of 223 caliber ammo, the same type used in popular AR-15 rifles. On Wednesday, he tried to take 3,000 rounds of 223s from the same store, the police said. Officers have recovered ammunition as part of the investigation. Police said they believe that Seals intended to sell the ammo to others. The investigation is continuing and other charges are pending. Seals is currently awaiting trial for an April incident where he allegedly took a $398 TV from Walmart. And still in other news here in Waterloo, police investigating gunfire house shot. In Waterloo, police are investigating gunfire in a Waterloo neighborhood early Wednesday. Patrol officers heard gunshots in the 400 block of Almond Street around 2:05 a.m. No damage or injuries were reported, but police found 12 spent shell casings in the area. The gunfire came about a day after a Waterloo home was shot up early Tuesday morning. In that case, authorities counted 12 bullet holes in the house at 535 Kern Street. Officers also found 16 spent shell casings. people were home at the time of the shooting, but no injuries were reported, the police went on to say. And that just about does it for the reading of the Courier here today, here on June 30th, 2022. And I am your reader, Peter Welch, and you have been listening to the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Thank you for sharing your time with us today. Take care. Bye-bye.